It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And look at us, a brand new month of broadcasting. We've made it to July 2018 here at the Horn. HeadOn.live is our home. That's where you go if you'd like to become part of the Madcap Merry Multimedia Zany Wacky real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump right in. You'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Silent R. Lamar and VT Blom. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a spacing guild master, is not folding space into the blazing hot confines of the man cave today. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, it is Monday, the second day of July 2018, and we've got both streams running hot and true. According to Brother Deacon Asa, we are we're good to go on White Rose Society stream and on the HeadOn.live stream. That means everything's up and running at TuneIn and Roku and Stitcher and over at FYINation.com. This is a good sign. It is also the first of the month, and we have subscribers to thank. We have many subscribers to thank. Well, we've got subscribers to thank. Thanks going out to Peter in Austin. Thank you very kindly, Peter. Thank you very kindly to Vernon in San Diego. Thank you to Lauren, our correspondent from the far reaches of distant frozen Alberta. Might not even be frozen right now. Who knows? Thank you, Lauren. Thank you very kindly to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. Thank you, Terry. Thank you very much indeed to Kay in California. Thank you, Kay. Thank you for being one of the partial sponsors of this program. Thank you very much to our buddy Bob in North Carolina. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Thank you to Smitty in Florida. Thank you, Smitty. Thanks as well to Joseph in Washington State. Thank you, Joseph. And thank you. Thank you to Brock. Thank you very kindly indeed, Brock. But that's not all. Oh, no. That's not all by any stretch of the imagination. No, no. We have subscribers also to thank in the form of Paul out in Arizona. Thank you, Paul. Thank you very kindly to Clarence in Philly. Clarence, have you moved yet? We had that, I don't know. Thank you, Clarence. Thank you to Albert down in North Carolina, running a heroic race for a legislative seat down there. Thank you, Albert. Thank you very, very kindly. Best of luck, and golly, I hope you can be one of the ones who helps restore some sanity to what once upon a time was one of the more enlightened of the southern states. Good luck, Albert. Thank you very kindly indeed. And thanks as well to Elizabeth in New York. Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you so very much. And so those are our subscribers to get us off the ground at the beginning of July. You know, the overall goal is still someday to have 400, or the equivalent thereof, 400 $10 a month subscribers. And if we had that, I would never have to go through a program mentioning fundraising again. It would just be a matter of issuing thank yous and moving on from there. Maybe if we do what we can to grow the conversation and grow the group of people participating in it. Maybe that helps. So thank you very much to all of our subscribers for the first and second day of the month. Thank you very much indeed to our Patreon subscribers. That'll clear in here in a day or so, and I will issue those thank yous as well. And remember, some of the Patreon subscribers have received your bumper stickers. Some of you have not, because you did not provide me with a mailing address. I need one of those. I can't get the bumper stickers to you via Wishcraft. I need a real physical mailing address. And I promise, I won't sell it to anybody. We really, really, that's icky, and we won't do that. Same goes for your email address, for that matter. So, and one last reminder, since this is the first broadcast of the month of July, that brings a special challenge with the first broadcast of the month, and that is Shirley's Memorial Challenge, named in honor of the challenge that was started by our dear friend Bruce, who has since passed away, but whose determination to keep this whole help keep this whole thing going is perpetuated thanks to our buddy Laborman, our buddy Ralphs, and one other individual who wishes to remain nameless, all of whom, the three of whom, go toward creating a $200 challenge that begins the first broadcast of every month. So, here's how it works, and it's a one-day deal. If we can raise the $200 for the first broadcast of the month, then that one with that one-shot deal, it gets doubled, okay? And that comes in very handy on some very dry days later on, because they inevitably come along. Okay? So, this evening, we'll try to raise $200. One at 200, two at 100, four at 25. No, four at 50, eight at 25. Ciphering problem. 16 at 1250. 32 at 6 1/4. 10 at 20, 20 at 10. You get the idea. And that's how that all works out. So the challenge is on the table. Challenge doesn't get met. Oops. But hopefully the challenge will get met. Just use the PayPal button over at headon.live. It's easy. If you'd like to become a subscriber, the button's there. Just click the little box in there that says make this happen again every month. Set it and forget it. And we'll go from there. But apart from that, it's also Moran Monday. And wow, we're all set. We're all set. We got enough Morans for probably a month of Moran Mondays. Just this evening alone. So we'll be getting to that in fairly short order. Okay, so, let's get it going, shall we? Because when you're dealing with Morans, let's start with a little piece of history. It is, like I said, the 2nd of July, and Lee in New York sends an email along, Virginia's Resolution on Independence. And this being moving toward Independence Day, July the 4th, I always try to think of it with some degree of historical accuracy, noting that it was a move toward a national independence, but contained within what would be the new country, there was lots of not independence. So there's that. But Lee writes, "Howdy, Bob." Howdy, Lee. "I wish you well on the day on the calendar that John Adams thought the nation would celebrate with fireworks and fanfare as its anniversary. To quote Maxwell Smart, missed it by that much. Personally, I do not think you should celebrate independence until you actually have it. But I know that September 3rd, 1783, Treaty of Paris, is not as popular as the date of the Declaration. Of course, we look at the document far differently than those involved in creating and editing it. We like the preamble. They cared about the list of grievances. Anyway, I know good food will be part of your day." Well, I'd say most of the holidays celebrating, because, you know, I'm going to be working on July the 4th and July the 3rd and July the 5th. That's how it goes around here. Did that over the weekend. And over the weekend, I decided that I've been just a barbecue maniac lately. God, I love that acorn Kamado grill. Unpaid product placement. You really cannot beat it for the money. The folks at Char Griller, I think they're headquartered on Sea Island, Georgia. Wowzer, they did a great job. And so, I'm not bragging, but ribs, pork butts, briskets, things like that, I've got it pretty well down. And so I needed some work on the pizza front, because that thing it's a great pizza oven too. So Saturday and Sunday, Saturday was an experimental pizza, just went with a basic pizza margherita, you know, basil leaves, fresh tomato slices, tomato sauce, and fresh sliced whole milk mozzarella. And it was okay. But to be fair, and, you know, I'm not going to bullshit you about on the food porn. You could have used that crust to shingle roofs in some desert climates of this country. As long as it wasn't going to get rained on, that crust would have stopped. It would have been just fine. Mm-hmm. Probably would have made the house smell pretty good, too. But, yeah. But yesterday, having learned, and I'm convinced that one of the things that made the crust go south is the yeast I used. Fleischmann's Pizza Crust Yeast. By the way, the Fleischmann's Corporation of Canada. Happy Canada Day yesterday, everyone. Oh, Canada, we don't know the words to the song, but it's really cool and doesn't last very long. That's about it. The Fleischmann's Yeast Company of Canada offers up something called Fleischmann's Pizza Crust Yeast. Fast and easy, promising 30-minute pizza. Shit, if I wanted 30-minute pizza, I'd order from one of those carry-out companies owned by a right-wing turd. No, I wanted wood-fired oven pizza, courtesy of the Acorn. But anyway, I used that. It did not work out. I will never buy it again. And then yesterday I used some basic IDY, instant dry yeast. Crust came out much better. Used a nice basic organic pasta sauce from Kroger's, some shredded mozzarella, Kaneka sausage, yes, 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 and mushrooms and onions and green peppers. And it was freaking delicious. So that's pretty much my holiday cooking. I don't know, may come up with something for, say, the 4th of July itself. I don't even know what Marseille pizza is, Brother Deacon Asa. You ought to try making some Marseille pizza on the Acorn. After all, the French taught the Italians everything they know about food. That's a little bass-ackwards, Brother Deacon Asa, seeing how the Italians actually settled the place that's Marseille, but we're not going to get into an argument about that. But that was, that was my 4th of July food porn. And yes, Kaneka sausage goes really, really well on a pizza. But back to More and Monday. Holiday edition. Yes. Oh, and by the way, thanks to go out. Thank you, Rocco. Rocco, who apparently can make Sunday Italian Sunday gravy and pizza dough in his sleep. I'd love to see that. Man, a lifetime of just knowing that stuff. Me, I'm out there, I'm stretching the dough and pinching the little holes in it. But Rocco is a brand new subscriber. Thank you, Rocco. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. And thank you very much indeed to Charlene and to Brian. We've got half of Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge covered now. Thank you. Thank you to Brian and Rocco and Charlene. That's awesome. That means we've only got 10 at 10. Hey, how about 10 new subscribers? Yeah. First of the month makes it real easy. 10 new subscribers. How about that? Or just 10 folks at 10 bucks or one at 100 or et cetera. You know, me and the ciphering. That's awesome. Thank you, Brian. And thank you, Rocco. And thank you, Charlene, for getting us halfway to the to Shirley's Challenge for this first broadcast day of the month. Struck me as somewhat prophetic when I realized that way back 58 years ago, my parents got married on Canada Day. How about that? That's really, really cool. Maybe it was some sort of Jungian synchronistic foreshadowing of the fact that in 2018, as between the two countries, Canada would turn out to be actually a little bit better at maintaining their democracy than, say, the United States of America presently in the grips of an orange maniac. But speaking of orange maniacs, by the way, I left out one subscriber. Thank you to our buddy Reggie. Out in the desert, either on one side of the American-Mexican border or the other. Thank you, Reggie. Thank you very kindly indeed. Maniacs. And an American Independence Day sort of maniac. This involves... this involves a right-wing maggot fool / tool. Yeah. But wait, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves, aren't we? Okay, let's do this right. Don't want to jinx our Moran Monday. Oh, no. Because Moran Monday comes with stuff like, intro music and things like that. Just a second here. Okay, just wanted to make sure that I had her ready to roll as soon as we were done with the intro to Moran Monday. Hold on.
You got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
¶¶
Step right up, step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. It's Morin Monday on the Horn. Yes, yes, yes. Here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas where I now stand, you'll find them all. Birchers, Deathers, Ninthers, Tenthers, Baggers, Booger Eaters, Maggots, Trumpanzees, Republicans, Libertarians, every last portion of the Morin spectrum here for your amazement, your shock, your stunned, slack-jawed freak-outedness. That's right, friends and neighbors, aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins. Morin Monday on the Horn is the Morin Monday tent is just mere steps away from the Carnival Midway, where only moments ago you were throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in a desperate hope of winning a tiny little iguana that would grow to a great big iguana and terrorize your entire family. Well, come on over here because, well, you can't tell the Morins without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morins. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. For less than the cost of a half of a McDonald's hamburger per day, a $10 a month Horn subscriber gets access to the Morin Monday tent and all the other various and sundry tents of the Horn radio experience. Yes, for pennies a day, pennies a day. A warning does go out to those choosing to enter the Morin Monday tent, however, friends and neighbors, aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins. Keep a close hand and a close eye and a close watch on wallets, purses, jewelry, backpacks, children, animals, cats, dogs, even the iguana that you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls because the, and European-style messenger bags, because the Morins can get grabby. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morins. Oh, and you will, we are. Mm-hmm. So many Morins. So much Morin. So much. But there's a natural place to begin for this Morin Monday. Because this is a historical week for the United States. It is the week in which we note the issuance of the Declaration of Independence. Approved July 1st, thought, as Lee notes, by John Adams, who just didn't really have a knack for that sort of thing. He figured it would be celebrated on the 2nd, but it wasn't. It's July the 4th is when we get it. And that's fine, because we weren't particularly doing anything with July 4th at that point in time anyway. It's an interesting document. I read it aloud, even if I'm the only one in the room. I read it aloud every July 4th because it's got a it's a fascinating piece of historical propaganda. God damn it! Liberally done called our Declaration of Independence the national law of American law. They done called it propaganda. God damn it! Mm-hmm. Well, it is. It didn't have any legal force or effect. It was a document that was written and signed and proclaimed throughout the land. Fact of the matter is, a lot of ho-hum. A lot of, oh no, not this shit again. Because this the British colonies in the United States were not unified in a desire to not be British anymore. Fully half or more of this country was like, I don't know, you know, we've got it pretty good. I mean, they sent the entire British army over here to fight the French and Indian War, and then they asked us to pay some money for it, and we said no, and they kind of said, well, all right. Issued some stamp acts and taxes and stuff like that, but we kind of refused to pay those too. They're a long way away. Why upset the apple cart? And that was a half or more of the people here. Didn't really want to be a new country. And had some pretty good arguments. But the Continental Congress was a group of wealthy white men who had other ideas. Samuel Adams was a publican and a brewer and part-time terrorist and philosopher. John Hancock had a nice going concern in smuggling and was wealthy. Thomas Jefferson, of course, when he wasn't banging away on one of his slaves like a cheap gong, had some high-minded ideals about how slavery was wrong, except for the one that he, you know, kind of had to have, because otherwise he had a devil of a time getting laid. Yeah, he was kind of nerdy and thin and pale and ginger and spoke in a high, squeaky voice, we're told, and shuffled around the house in bedroom slippers and bathrobes. He was the original American slacker in many ways. He could drink his weight in wine, maybe smoke up a little of George Washington's best ganja and engage in some high-minded philosophical stuff. And then there was Ben Franklin, you know. Ben was the closest we ever got to an American Leonardo da Vinci. And his inclinations toward liberty, so-called liberty, you know, sit, liberty, sit. His inclinations toward liberty, of course, didn't include people with dark skin or, you know, the women folk. Somewhere out there, there's an article. You might want to look it up. Just look up Ben, maybe start by searching Ben Franklin and his sister article. The differences between Ben Franklin and his sister and the lives they led. Kind of gives you an idea of what male privilege looked and felt like in, say, 1770s North America. But anyway, they had some high-minded notions about being independent from Britain because they, well, hey, if we're independent, then maybe we can keep all the money for ourselves. Because, of course, it's about the money. And the fact of the matter is, no, the Declaration of Independence has no legal force and effect whatsoever. And in fact, by the time of Abraham Lincoln, while the 4th of July remained a going concern, and celebrations and barbecue and fireworks and getting liquored up and whatever, because frontier America, and for that matter, the coastal America that was pretty well settled by 1776, has long had a close association with getting liquored up. You know, you got to remember when Thomas Jefferson commissioned and sent out the Lewis and Clark expedition, the Corps of Discovery, as it was called, about the most important thing that they packed along was several barrels of whiskey and beer and a few jugs of, you know, laudanum, opium, and some food once in a while. Yeah. Ron in Raleigh says, don't forget, John Hancock had really good handwriting. and that's one of those language things. They used to say, yes, sir, yeah, if you'll just put your John Hancock right here on this here paper, you can drive away in this 1972 Ford shitbox. What's weird, though, is I've noticed that over the years, put your John Hancock has turned into put your John, at least here in Appalachia. Can't speak for anywhere else. Put your John Henry right here. John Henry was a steel-driving man. He was an African-American man, good with a hammer. But there's nothing in the literature, nothing in the legends, nothing in the myths about him being a particularly expert demonstrator of penmanship. But that's the way American ignorance runs. We go from John Hancock to John Henry, talking about signatures. On the other hand, when it comes to using a sledgehammer, nobody says, well, you just swing your John Hancock right here. No, it doesn't work that way. But to pick up where I left it, no, by the time of Lincoln, the Declaration of Independence, Dr. Bill is much better at this than I. He was feeling a little under the weather today. so he did not have a program. But hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. And like I said, he's much better. But by the time of Abraham Lincoln, the Declaration of Independence had pretty much been relegated to the mists of time, and nobody really even talked about it anymore. Lincoln revived the Declaration of Independence because when he was out there learning to read by himself and reading whatever he could get his hands on in his frontier upbringing, he was moved by the beauty of the preamble. And as Lee notes, we love the preamble. They were more worried about their grievances against the heathen savages, among other things. Or George III's purported limitations on immigration. They wanted to let anybody in, pretty much. The founding signers of the Declaration of Independence, and George was a little more Trumpian about immigration. I guess maybe he only wanted people from Norway too. But that's all a setup of sorts, because it is, after all, Moran Monday. And so, therefore, we come to Kaylee McEnany. Yes, Kaylee McEnany, who, for some reason or another, that just simply beggars credulity, was booked by some booker over at CNN to appear on their network to talk about the upcoming confirmation fight over whatever right-wing maniac from the Heritage Foundation or the Federalist Society that Julius Geezer nominates to fill the slot left by the decidedly, now we know, conflicted and corrupt Anthony Kennedy, who never bothered to disclose the fact that his son was in a 12-year business banking relationship with Donald Trump and had, in fact, loaned him $1 billion along the way. Ah, who'd want to know that, right? Yeah. Because, I mean, it certainly doesn't create the appearance of any impropriety. Heck no, except that it does. But anyway, Kaylee McEnany, former maggot spokes weirdo, and now an official spokes weirdo for the Republican National Committee, was invited on CNN to talk about the whole replacement for Kennedy thing. And she was on a panel, and they turned toward a discussion of the Constitution, about which Kaylee McEnany knows, as you will soon hear, approximately absolute nothing. And probably get the hockey puck and the duct tape out for this one. Get your red, white, and blue hockey puck and your red, white, and blue duct tape out for this, just because of the season. Kaylee McEnany has decided that the Constitution of the United States is just like the Bible. You can't question anything in it. This may take a little bit. Bear with me.
Joining me now, policy strategist Elena Beverly, formerly associate director for the Obama White House Office of Urban Affairs. Peter Emerson. Peter has worked in three Democratic administrations. Kaylee McEnany, spokesperson for the RNC. And Ned Ryan, CEO of American Majority and former writer for President George W. Bush, speechwriter, that is. With a welcome to you both. Kaylee, we'll go ladies first here. And I'm curious if the president isn't going to be...
Oopsie, I made a mistake. This is MSNBC, not CNN. But... well, it's not going to, and that's Alex Witt doing the talking. You got two Democrats versus two Republicans. Sort of a tag team steel cage death match, I guess.
asking his candidates about Roe v. Wade, as he said in an interview with Maria Bartiromo, although he spoke about that on the campaign trail. What do Republicans think he should be asking?
Well, you know, as Neil Gorsuch pointed out in his confirmation hearings, President Trump did not ask about overturning Roe v. Wade. I believe that will be a precedent carrying forward. You know, it's really...
You really don't have to ask Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch about overturning Roe v. Wade, or anybody who gets a nod from a Republican president, particularly this Republican president, because it is understood that you cannot be nominated to the Supreme Court of the United States by a Republican unless you have long since passed the litmus test of voting to overturn Roe versus Wade, which, of course, will open the door to overturning Griswold versus Connecticut, which, after all, is the it's the lodestone of the whole process, and that is destroying the constitutional right to privacy. Yes. And just an observation along the way. We talk about, and you'll hear it in various aspects of the for-profit media, they'll talk about Roe, and they'll talk about a woman's right to choose. You know what modifying word they never put in front of right? Constitutional. Now, by God, if they're talking about guns, they talk about their Second Amendment right to keep them armed bears, or bear arms. And they throw that constitutional in there as a matter of course. But when we talk about a woman's right to make decisions about whether or not to have children, which is, by the way, a constitutional right embodied within the right to privacy, which is established in Griswold and Roe, we never say her constitutional right. So somehow or another, it winds up being something that is just subject to some sort of national consensus. When it's anything but. It is equivalent to the right not to have to quarter troops in your own home. It's an equivalent right to the right not to have to self-incriminate. It's a right equivalent, equal to the right to a trial by the jury of your peers. It's a right equal to the right against unreasonable search and seizure. But because we don't speak of it as a constitutional right, we easily forget that it is one. But Kayleigh McEnany is not a constitutional scholar. One gets the idea Kayleigh McEnany is not much in the way of a scholar at all. That's, among other things, why she finds herself being, a poster child for More Ann Monday here on the Horn. And she says that, well, Donald Trump didn't ask Neil Gorsuch if he... No, because Neil Gorsuch is known to... Well, he will vote to overturn Roe versus Wade, given half a goddamn chance. And that reminds me, we've also got to deal here with... I think we need reverb for this. Hold on. Noted Republican moderate... Susan Collins of Maine. She's earned her way into More Ann Monday as well, but we got to deal with Kayleigh first, shall we?
Important, I think, to separate politics from what the role of a judge is. You know, I'm here as spokesperson for the Republican National Committee. We're a party of life. We're a party that regrets the fact that 60 million children are not here because of abortion.
Yeah, we're also a party of life that really hasn't managed to work up a proper SAD over the... Oh, million or so Iraqi civilians, including unborn Iraqis and little children Iraqis and mommy Iraqis and daddy Iraqis and grandma and grandpa and aunt and uncle and cousin Iraqis, whose life we really didn't value so much after all back when we got four square behind Georgia's filthy little illegal war against the people of Iraq. But we're a party of life, and we're also not a party of life when it comes to thousands of kidnapped children that we really have no idea where they are now, They're just somewhere in the negligible care, custody, and control of for-profit entities that we've handed the children to after we kidnapped them from their parents at the border. But hey, we're the Republican Party. We're the party of life. No, do continue, Kaylee, you goddamned idiot.
That is distinct from the role of a judge. The role of a judge is to call balls and strikes. The conservative legal movement, of which I was a part of, got my Juris Doctor from Harvard.
Oh, you have got to be lying. They did not give you a law degree from Harvard University, you fucking idiot. That must mean there's a gumball machine somewhere in the Harvard School of Law, and she put a quarter in and out rolled a goddamn JD. Holy mackerel. This woman knows less about the Constitution than I know about the mating habits of the multi-limbed amorphous aliens of Norblap 9. And you know what? If you don't believe me, let's let her prove it.
Law school. I was on part of the Federalist Society. Federalist Society, who helped President Trump put this list together.
Yeah, the Federalist Society. Okay, that means you've got a law degree. You're a right-wing Republican, and when nobody's looking, you pick your teeth with your toenail clippings. Okay, everything's clear now.
So this is not about ensuring outcomes. This is about appointing judges who interpret the words on the page of the Constitution as they're meant to be interpreted. So this is not about a political...
Am I hearing somebody laughing in the background? I think I heard a couple of snorts. This is not a... I talked to Dr. Bill earlier today. And we were talking about... Because he's just gobsmacked by Alito's Janus decision of recent vintage. And he said... And I said to him, you got to understand, Dr. Bill, the Republican idea of... The conservative right-wing, white-wing idea of jurisprudence is ends-based. They start with the result they want to reach, and then they reverse engineer the opinion from it. And no matter how crazy it comes out, that's what they go with. And that's why you wind up with things like a presumption of white innocence in gerrymandering redistricting in Texas. I'm going to be a long time forgetting that one. Oh, why? No. No, goodness me. It's Texas with a long history of suppressing black votes, but, just because they did it once upon a time, that doesn't create a presumption that white folks would ever try to do that again. No! Heck no!
Whew!
Yeah, party. Because, among other things, that's John Roberts' little pet project, is tearing down every bit of civil rights legislation that he can get his paws on and cast his beady little eyes on. But back to Kaylee. She's a legal scholar.
Outcome. It is about having judges who respect the rule of law, who respect the Constitution.
Elena, I'd like you to respond to that.
Well, I agree with Kaylee only in as much as this should be not about politics. It should be about the Constitution. It should be about judicial responsibility. And it should be about the responsibility of our senators to provide advice and consent to this process. So we know that on the campaign, Trump said that he was only going to nominate justices who would overturn Roe v. Wade, and we need to look at the record of individuals who he is nominating, and then it's up to our senators. The time is now for our senators to stand up for our civil rights and civil liberties and put country above the politics of partisanship and polarization. This is a time when we need to ensure that the rights of our children, that rights of my daughter are not going to be more limited than mine are because a justice is appointed to the bench who could curtail civil liberties for the next 40 years.
So that's Elena Beverly. And we know that she doesn't have the stronger argument than Kaylee McEnany's because she didn't say anything about going to Harvard or being a member of the Federalist Society or about having judges, blah, 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 constitutional originalism, yada, yada, yada. I'd still like to hear a woman's right to choose described more often as being a constitutional right, just like owning a gun. maybe America would get a better idea then of what's at stake. Well, thank you, Alexander. Alexander says, hey, Brother Kincaid, I'm listening to your program and listening to this racist, lying ass troll of a woman. She got it right. She's about the rights of her white children. That's probably pretty close. Yeah. But somewhere back there, there was snickering. Lee says, a backgrounder on Kaylee McEnany. McEnany also went to law school. After finishing her undergraduate work, she started out at the University of Miami School of Law and eventually transferred to Harvard Law School, graduating with a J.D. in May of 2016. So if she hadn't been the kind of person that, say, the Republican Party was looking for, blonde, she would be still be carrying somebody's briefcase in a law firm somewhere for the next 3 to 5 years. Ron in Raleigh wants to know, hey, Bob, do these Federalist Society assholes strut around in knee breeches and powdered wigs when they channel the founders' original intent? The pretzel logic these pillocks use to justify some of their dumbass decisions is beyond me. Well, that's because you engage in rational thought, Ron. They merely say, I want to send them barefoot and pregnant back to the kitchen where they deserve to be. And then they bark like prairie dogs and hoot like barn owls and screech about original intent and crank out some piece of crap decision that gets them where they want to be. It is actually the exact opposite of legal scholarship. Legal scholarship is about trying to find out what the law is, should be, based upon what the law has been, stare decisis, and all of that crap. And that's anything but what this bunch does. But let's go back, because here in a moment, you're going to be glad you put the hockey puck in your mouth and went a couple of times around your head with the duct tape, because speaking of hooting like a barn owl, Kaylee McEnany is going to make you do that.
Before I get to the gentleman here, I'm going to do this quickly. With Amy Barrett being the top female name and one that's been bantered about, and by most accounts is one of the top two choices at this point going into this nomination process, this is somebody who has a very conservative background. She is very pro-life, and yet there's thought that
pro-birth,
maybe the pick of a woman,
Alex,
would
pro-birth
sort of soften the blow, with people anticipating, well, maybe she would vote to stay with Roe v. Wade. Both of you ladies on this panel, Kaylee, you first. What do you think about that? Do you know that Amy Barrett, were she to be the nominee, would definitely support overturning Roe v. Wade?
No, I don't know that. You know, she will interpret the laws as they are written. She honors precedent and stare decisis. She's actually written about this. And she will come to the right conclusion.
Which, of course, is overturning Roe v. Wade. Remember, ends-based decision-making. And if she's very pro-life, that means she has expressed pro-life ideas. We'll probably get to a little bit more of this analysis when we get to noted moderate Republican Susan Collins.
I love having the idea of a woman on the court, and I would point out that Democrats have been saying...
A woman. Never mind the fact that there are two women on the court. They are neither blonde nor white. So in Kaylee McEnany's blonde, white little world, Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, they don't count.
You know, overturning Roe v. Wade, they've been using this as a scare tactic going back to 1982 when Sandra Day O'Connor was appointed to the court. Obviously, Roe v. Wade's still here. So, you know, we're having this discussion. I think it's really a scare tactic to dissuade us from picking conservative, constitution-loving judges.
Yeah, because... people who aren't conservative, they don't love the Constitution. They don't have a copy of it in original lambskin vellum that they use to rub on their private parts when they're loving the Constitution real good, like squeal like a pig. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is madness. Lee in New York says, these Republican original intent judges will not be content until they've turned Barack Obama into three-fifths of a president. Lee, no offense, buddy, but they already, Mitch McConnell did that single-handedly when he refused to give Merrick Garland so much as the time of day. Oh, no, I'm sorry, Barack. You're only three-fifths of a president. You don't get to appoint another Supreme Court justice. Nope. And let's be clear about something. This is a bit of an aside, and we're going to, don't worry, the hockey puck, will be, just gnaw on it a little bit. You'll be all right. Oops, my bad. Thank you, Lee. I left off the notorious RBG. But she's not a Constitution-loving woman, so she don't count neither. My sincere and profound apologies to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She deserves better than I just gave her. Sorry about that. But there is a risk. And I don't want to come across as being unsympathetic. I think I've established my bona fides on that point, where the constitutional right of a woman to make her own decisions about the operations of her reproductive organs is concerned. But we are at present talking about almost that and nothing but that. And there is a danger inherent in that. Consider, if you will, the confirmation hearings for Ann Gorsuch's boy Neil. Again, the concern was about Roe v. Wade. Much concern. And he's a reliable vote to overturn it. A generation of right-wing hand-wringing and the bloody shirt waving makes certain of that, because you can't be a Republican and be pro-life, constitutional rights. You have to be pro-life, you know, pro-fetus, in order to be a Republican. But lo and behold, back when he was still in the Senate, we found out under a withering cross-examination from Senator Al Franken that this conservative justice actually wrote him an opinion saying that an African-American truck driver should have been willing to freeze to death in his truck rather than leaving the rig and going off when it broke down to try to find help both for himself and for his truck. That's some more of your constitutional originalism at work there. It was, as Al Franken described, and as we will not hear anyone else so describe, an absurd result. He made a monkey of Ann Gorsuch's boy, Neil. And now, sadly, the Senate Judiciary Committee is without one of its more forceful voices. But we're not going to go into that. Irish Dave says, why does this feckless twunt sound like Laura Harry Beaver Ingram radio talk slots? Oh, Jesus, Dave. But what about the welfare promoted generals and shit? Three-fifths, and then Brock Usain replied, yes, a mass myth. Dave's always good for an arcane email. And Laura Harry Beaver Ingram, what? I thought... sometimes I think it's just a matter of hearing things read out loud. The welfare of promoted generals. you know, promote the general welfare preamble to the Constitution, which incidentally is also deemed not to be law, because we can't be promoting any general welfare out there as a matter of law, because, well, you know, then all those people would have all that money and the poor little billionaires would be lining up to press their noses against the frosty window panes, looking inside at all the at all the pores, eating all them hot pockets that they got no right to. And then there's this. Ron and Raleigh points out, not necessary. It's not necessary for these fools to overturn Roe v. Wade. They'll just proceed to uphold any bullshit state law that restricts abortion, like the 6-week heartbeat rule or the clinic rules that require doctors with admitting privileges or corridor widths or square footage requirements or any bullshit Republican state legislatures can think of. There's only one clinic in the entire state of North Dakota. Yep. Entirely true. But they really would like to get their mitts on Roe, because defeating the right of privacy is a big deal. Remember, for the most part, your so-called pro-fetus movement is also very much anti-contraception. That's why a woman was humiliated in Peoria, Arizona, a couple of weeks back when she was trying to get desperately needed medication that would cause her to expel the soon-to-be dead fetus from inside her before the dead fetus could poison her. Because dead fetuses do that. That's why Arizona has a conscience clause for pharmacist lists, so that they can tell that woman that she don't need no slut medicine in the name of Jesus. Which the Walgreens pharmacist, you know, did. And still has, a job. Larry says, you mean to fucking tell me that at least Fargo and Bismarck don't both have one? I mean, I know where we're talking about, but that's a fucking outrage. Well, yeah, it is. And remember, the Supreme Court last week said that precious religious institutions that run bullshit crisis pregnancy centers that aren't even clinics can hold themselves out as clinics and don't have to tell the women who come there the truth. That there is ready access to abortion and reproductive care in the state of California, and that they have an absolute right to receive it. No, that was violating the religion industry's right to free speech. Because the right to free speech under the First Amendment includes the right to be the right to lie for Jesus. Yes, isn't it interesting how the white wing anti-Islamic subgroup is out there on, you know, you can't trust these Muslims because it says right there in their Koran that if you're one of the heathen unbelievers, it's all right to lie to you. Then they turn around and say, yeah, but we're going to lie to people, and it's all right for us too, because Jesus and God is love, y'all. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I know. Marty says, and because Al Franken did that to Ann Gorsuch's boy, Neil, the Lady Dems hounded him out of the Senate. I don't know that there's exactly a one-to-one analog there, but it's close enough. Oh, I hear it. I hear thunder. It is 1 minute before the hour. I'm going to just continue on, but I should let you know that because there's thunder out there, and in fact, because our internet service is provided by one of the most unreliable internet service providers on planet Earth, namely in two-wit Frontier Communications. If this program suddenly disappears, you'll know it's because the highly unreliable power grid and the highly unreliable internet service providers were, to one degree or another, knocked out by something as simple as a summer thunderstorm. So just if the program goes away, don't worry, don't wonder, don't go, oh my God, did the aliens get Bob? No. No, we just have a craptastic coal-fired power grid that can't withstand more than a 10-mile-an-hour wind. Got a thunderstorm down in Kanawha County just to the immediate west of us last night and some flash flooding. Next thing you knew, 15,000 people were out of power. Because that's how AEP rolls. But we are an hour into the program, and before I go back to Kaylee McEnany, let me note that we got halfway through the Shirley's Challenge early in the program, and we need another $100 to finish it off, and that way double your contribution. Turn your 5 into 10, your 10 into 20, your 40 into 80, your 25 into 50. We got $100 to go through any combination without forcing me to do a whole lot of ciphering and screwing up. I mean, I couldn't even count to 3 earlier, for Christ's sakes. Okay, so just noting that. But now, back to Kaylee McEnany, because American history, and because Constitution, and because, little maggots are not known for their intellectual rigor.
All right, but it is an issue. Elena, do you have any concerns about the possibility of Amy Barrett being picked?
Absolutely. Look, being a woman is not necessarily a proxy for being pro-choice. Right. And we are correct in that a judge must look at precedent and make independent decisions. Right. So we have a president who has committed to nominating only individuals who he believes will overturn Roe v. Wade. So, and that's not to incite fear unnecessarily
however,
in the heart of the public. It's a fact, and therefore it should be something that we fear.
And to that point, Ned, there are a lot of women across this country that it is a fear-inducing concept to think that Roe v. Wade would be overturned. Is this something that shouldn't be put out there as some sort of a litmus test for the next Supreme Court pick?
Well, first of all, I think it's something that's kind of understood. Of course it's going to be a big issue, Alex, and I think people are dancing around it. It is an issue. Elections have consequences. And this is why evangelicals came out and voted for Trump in 2016. And I've actually been making the argument that when they voted for him, they were late breaking. If he gives them another conservative judge, they'll become foot soldiers for him in the 2020 reelect. And, you know, a lot of us as conservatives feel that Roe v. Wade was incorrectly decided back in 1973. We'd like to see it overturned, thrown back to the state legislatures.
And then what Ron was talking about transpires. Various and sundry state legislatures across the country enact as many barriers as they can to preventing a woman from having access to reproductive health care, and to hell with their constitutional rights. See how it works? Sure. But he also points something out here that I think is worthy of mention. We've seen Republican presidents with Republican majorities in the House and Senate before, and a relatively friendly Supreme Court, namely the Reign of Error. And for all the lip service that they gave to the poor, precious little fetuses, they somehow couldn't quite bring themselves to ban abortion. Nope, they just couldn't do it. Wonder why? Well, it has a lot to do with the fact that there is an unspoken fear in the white wing that if you give them what they want, if you criminalize abortion, make it illegal, as Donald Trump once said, make women criminally liable for having one, you might just lose them. Well, in the name of Jesus, our work here is done. We've saved all the precious little fetuses, And soon we'll have millions and millions of happy little fetuses out there that we ain't going to do a goddamn thing to help. We're certainly not going to try to feed none of them if they're poor. But one of them's going to cure cancer. Yes. Praise Jesus. We'd have done had a cancer cure by now if we hadn't been aborting all them fetuses. But they might just disappear back behind the baseboards where they came from, these evangelicals. Because the entirety, the sum total of the Republican political philosophy is division. Not unity, not national unity. They used to be, you know, back in the Eisenhower days, they were big into patriotism. I like Ike in America. But no more. Starting with Nixon's Southern strategy, the idea was to divide the country and keep it divided. And so if they lose the abortion issue, then they lose one of their divisors. And then they're not left with nothing but gay people and guns and Muslims and kidnapping immigrant children. And that's a problem. Because the fetus fetishists are more reliable than just about any other voting group. They will come out and vote for a Republican if he's absolutely soaked in foreign blood. Ooh, I bet you even heard that one, didn't you? Because that's who they are. So they got to find some way if they're gonna save the precious fetuses. They gotta find some way of keeping the evangelicals in the mix. And that won't necessarily be easy. Anyway, don't spit out the hockey puck.
And if Democrats and those that agree with Roe v. Wade want to see it still be a part of our law, go through the constitutional amendment process. That's the proper process that should be done with. But I will say this, two things. I think Trump will appoint a 40-something member of the Federal Society who is a strict originalist. I think Trump understands and realizes this is his chance to give himself something that Reagan and Obama and Clinton couldn't do. It will be the Trump court, and he could legitimately put the Supreme Court out of the reach of the left for at least a generation, if not more. He understands it. I don't think he's going to squander this chance, but more importantly, I don't think Mitch McConnell will squander this chance either.
We all are understanding what's at stake here, that's for sure, Ned. Peter, your thoughts as you wrap up this conversation here with the president planning to announce the pick on July 9th, the process to move to a hearing, confirmation while the calendar is racing toward the midterm election. Anything Democrats can do to block a nominee or at least slow the process down?
Absolutely, they can slow the process down. Whether they can block it or not is too early to tell. I'm just disappointed that Democrats haven't gotten the transplant of a spine or a heart and as yet showed any demonstration that they're willing to do the parliamentary as well as rallies as for today with immigration should be replicated around the country. I will say something, that Kayleigh's response was one of the most disingenuous responses. Constitutionalists and the Federalists would really take us back to the Constitution, which was primarily for white property owners, men. It's not
Here
for
it comes.
Blacks, it's not for Hispanics, and it's not for women.
All right, look, Kayleigh, I'm going to give you 15 seconds to respond.
Why does the little wingnut always get the last word? But anyway, this is what we've waited all this time for. American history. Deader than Pharaoh's house cat.
To Peter.
That's ridiculous. The Constitution is the founding document of the greatest country on earth, and for you to cast
right.
it in a racial light is absolutely ridiculous. That dishonors our founding fathers. It dishonors the principles that this country stands on.
Now, let's be clear. What he said is that is an absolute fact. Peter Emerson, who's worked in three Democratic administrations, said that the Constitution was written by white men, wealthy white men, for wealthy white men. And, of course, since there were only 15 seconds left, he didn't get to peel precious little Kayleigh like a grape which she so richly deserved. So please allow me, humble son of a state of a state university, to take a run at it. What Peter Emerson said was absolutely correct because, for instance, the right to vote in the Constitution, as it was originally ratified, was reserved to white male property owners. Not just white males, white male property owners. So if you were some guy out tilling the land and growing a crop, and you were paying it to the guy who and you were paying some portion of the crop to the guy who actually owned the land, guess what you didn't get to do at election time? That's right, vote. There was no voting for to be had by women. There was no voting to be had by indigenous peoples who had been here for 10, 15,000 years before the white folks got here. Hell, they weren't even deemed to be citizens until the late 19th century. And you don't own property at all if you don't have the wealth with which to obtain it. But Kayleigh McEnany approaches it as though Peter Emerson had just said that the Virgin Mary was a tavern prostitute. It's the founding document of the greatest country on earth, and for you to cast it in a racial light is absolutely ridiculous. Except for the fact that the Constitution said that people with skin darker than a brown paper bag were 3/5 of a human being. She takes an approach, as a constitutional originalist, to the Constitution that it is received wisdom. She gives it religious standing where it is irreligious in nature. She says that you cannot question the origins of the Constitution when, in point of fact, going back as far as the early 20th century, and a little a piece of scholarship called The Economic Interpretation of the Constitution, it's pretty easy to figure out pretty damn quick that the Constitution is a document that was originally written by, of, and for, you know, wealthy, white, property-owning men. Charles Beard wrote An Economic Interpretation of the United States Constitution way back in the early 20th century. And he made it, he made a compelling argument in 1913. He pointed out the distinctions between agrarian interests and business interests. It was supposedly discredited in the 1950s. It lends a sort of interesting interpretation to the idea of discredited. In 1965, Dennis W. Brogan said, "The suggestion that the Constitution had been a successful attempt to restrain excessive democracy, that it had been a triumph for property and big business, seemed blasphemy to many in the 1950s and an act of near treason in the dangerous crisis through which American political faith and practice were passing." Faith. Faith-based constitutional history. Well, Kayleigh McEnany there, Moran, makes it abundantly clear that if she had her way, she'd have Peter Emerson thrashed or burned at the stake or something for being a constitutional heretic. But you cannot evade the facts that attend the ratification of the Constitution of the United States. All those high-minded ideals were come up with were developed by wealthy white men, many of whom were slave owners, and whose ideas were informed by their ownership of slaves. If slavery is the original sin of white people on this continent, the enshrinement of it in the Constitution, well, it's a sort of forbidden fruit whose seeds were planted in its soil. But Jesus, what a moron. And Peter Emerson, in the few seconds remaining to him, tried to make that clear.
Peter, 10 seconds to you, that's it?
Well, unfortunately, I've read a lot of history, and if you know, having been in Cambridge, where you got your law degree, 20 miles to Concord is where the shot fired around the world was heard. And the Shays Rebellion is the tipping point for the polarization we're feeling for now. So it's not dishonoring, it's simply recognizing what history is.
All right, unfortunately, that is going to have to be the last word.
But this represents a problem. This is a problem. When you reduce the Constitution to religious text, which Kayleigh McEnany and the RNC and the maggots would do, you make it impossible for it to long stand. And of course, I think there's an argument to be had that getting rid of some elements of the Constitution is a central tenet for the maggots and for Julius Geezer. After all, you have to remember when he stands up there and ballyhoos about how we have the worst immigration laws, terrible immigration laws, he's actually talking about the Constitution of the United States. He's talking when he says we need to get rid of the judges, we just need to turn them around and send them back. He's talking about abrogating the 14th Amendment rights of due process and equal protection. So we'll keep the parts of the Constitution that the Republicans like. Republican jackass also note, we think Roe was improperly decided. You know why they think it was improperly decided? Because it acknowledged a right to privacy that Republicans like fat dead Tony Scalia howled against and continue to howl against. Among the ones who aren't fat dead Tony Scalia to this day, there can't be a right to privacy in the Constitution because it doesn't say right to privacy anywhere in the Constitution, because it's so damned obvious that the framers apparently didn't think they actually had to say that to the future. Oh, by the way, you have the right to, well, but it's in there. The Fourth Amendment says that you have a right to be secure in your persons, papers, and effects. That's privacy. But not to a Republican. And especially not where a precious little fetus is concerned. Because fetuses have more rights than actually born dead babies. Yeah. Todd in South Carolina stands says, is it me or has the right been using gaslighting techniques for a few decades now? I often hear this argument that a potential justice will be too much of an activist judge. Well, activist judge only gets used if it's somebody that the Federalist Society doesn't fucking approve of. Because there's no more of an activist judge than a judge who writes in a presumption of white innocence in gerrymandering racist redistricting cases. That's pretty damned activist. There's nothing much more activist out there than a person who says that that a woman does not have rights co-equal to those of a man. which is what any attempt to overturn Roe versus Wade says. Todd says, see Sonia Sotomayor and the former PBS anchor. It often seems as if the judge they support are more activists than the center or left type of judge that they were rallying against. Absolutely. I'm glad you brought up the most recent case with Gorsuch. It's obvious that in addition to the gaslighting, they have no problem going against legal precedent, yet this is all you hear from their side is that we must trust in the candidate's jurisprudence. Does this make any sense? Your argument does. Their reasoning or attempt, their pathetic attempt at reasoning, does not. Go Ribs, says Todd. Thank you, Todd. Brother Deacon Asa says, regarding white male property owners, essentially the original version of the Merkin Constitution was based closely on India's caste system. It's not like anybody had to, but what you can say is that it was closely modeled on Britain's class system, where it was near impossible to rise out of one's class. You know, when you're only three-fifths of a human being, it's going to be kind of goddamn difficult for you to, become president of the United States or even a governor or a senator or a member of the legislature. I mean, from a historical standpoint, which means absolutely nothing to a moron like Kayleigh McEnany, James Madison, toward the end of his life, was saying, hey, we got to expand the franchise. We got to have more people voting than just white male property owners. Otherwise, this thing's going to collapse under its own weight. The country's expanding, and there are people out there who damned well deserve to vote, but they don't own any property, don't own any real property. Might have a bunch of mules, but they don't have any real property. So it's anything but the static document that these goddamned originalists and federalists, and look, let's just get to the bottom of it. The federalists are just fascists, okay? The use of the term conservatism was applied to republicanism early on because fascism was just too out of favor. Hey, that was a good one.